very high expectation of what I've always thought this franchise is, and that was the best franchise in sports.
In the moments where we are down, as players, we got to execute. Every day, I'm so fortunate to be a part of this team.
This is 49ers Plus Minus.
Hey everybody, Tim Kawakami here, 49ers Plus Minus with my co-host, the great Matt Barros. This really is a Matt Barros week. This is when you shine. This is when you take over all conversation and discourse. We're just sitting there waiting. We're waiting for the draft crush to be announced by Matt Barros, the famous draft crush. You did it recently. We might as well talk about it. Matt Barros, take us through your process, how you got to this draft crush, and explain why this, and it's controversial too. I mean, it's always the best kind, right? People are, you know, outraged by your selection. I might understand. There's like people in the street holding up signs, protesting this. Give us the whole Matt Barros draft crush process, please.
Yeah, I mean, well, it dropped on Monday. Big drop, like an album release. It was not an easy process for me because they're picking at 31. And so you have to first figure out, okay, who's going to be there realistically at 31? And really, I started looking at the offensive lineman first, because that makes the most sense. And you and I have talked about that ad nauseum. This team needs to have a plan along the offensive line. But all of these elite guys, the Amarius Mims, probably the Tyler Guyton's, probably the Graham Barton's, he's the Duke, sort of do-everything offensive lineman. It's just hard to see them getting to 31. If that's your number one criterion, someone who realistically can get there, then I don't know if you're looking at offensive lineman anymore. And so you're looking at the other spots. And I looked at cornerback heavily. I looked at defensive end heavily. I looked at wide receiver heavily. And, I liked Kool-Aid McKinstry, the cornerback from Alabama. I know a lot of 49ers fans would love to have him. But the guy that I ended up picking, Adonai Mitchell, took McKinstry to school when Alabama played Texas. I mean, and I thought the bottom line for why I picked Adonai Mitchell is that I thought he was the best player, the most talented player who could possibly get to pick 31. My Twitter detractors, I don't know if you've ever experienced
No,
this,
I don't understand that concept.
There are some people that just get their jollies telling you how stupid and wrong you are. And they may be right in this, that even Adonai Mitchell might not get to 31. With the Bills, who just traded their top wide receiver, in need of a wide receiver, they're picking at 28. They seem like the biggest impediment for Mitchell getting to the 49ers at 31.
You are controversial because the 49ers, if they take a receiver, especially a receiver who kind of fits the Brandon Ayuk mold, there will be like, what's going on? They're going to have too many. They're going to trade, right? They're going to trade. That must mean they're trading Brandon Ayuk. I assume this draft crush is not made with the assumption that they're trading Brandon Ayuk. Maybe that they can go with three top receivers going into this season and then pick which two they keep after the season. Is that the presumption?
Yeah, that's the thing, is that they took Ayuk in 2020 because he could play all three wide receiver positions, the X, the Y, and what they call the F, the slot. This is the same thing with this guy. You would have two Ayuks. That was sort of the theme of my write-up about this guy. You would have the versatility of having two guys who can do a little bit of everything. Let's just assume that it's Deebo Samuel who's the odd man out in 2025. He's not Deebo Samuel. He's not breaking tackles. Although I did see him get a few screen passes and sort of flip passes, things like that. That's not who he is. He's a guy that runs around who creates a really nice open target for the quarterback. So you would have assuming that they do a deal with Ayuk, you would have two quarterbacks who seem to be very, very well made for a quarterback like Brock Purdy. Two receivers who mesh well with Purdy, basically, is what I'm saying. So yep. you're signing Purdy for the long term. You're putting a huge investment with him. What better way to support that investment than to have these two receivers who get open? I mean, that's the long and short of it. These guys run routes really well. They get open. They present a nice open target to the quarterback. That's why it makes sense.
Mitchell a little bit large, like, you know, Ayuk size, maybe even a little bit bigger than Ayuk. I think they
Ayuk is odd because he's 5'11", but he's got the wingspan and the legs of a much taller person. So this guy is taller in height. He's 6'2". They're about the same size weight wise, but there's a similar smoothness in how they run their routes, and I think that's the key. I mean, this guy's not perfect by any means. He was definitely not a yak guy mm-hmm. at Texas, which is weird because he does have size. He ran a 4.34 40, so he's got the speed, but he just was never able to have a lot of yards after the catch. So that very much is a weakness. I think that was a little bit of an anomaly. Just, you know, some plays he just gets tripped up at the last minute. But everything else seems to be there. He's really good around the goal line. Like, that's where he kind of showed up, Kool-Aid McKinstry, is that you cannot cover him one-on-one at the goal line. He was a touchdown machine when, they were 5 yards or closer.
I know one thing though, I read the Dane Brugler, the beast of his very credible, detailed, comprehensive draft guide has mentioned like details with A.D. Mitchell. That's not a big Kyle Shanahan thing where the receiver maybe isn't focused on the details. Although I do flashback to Ayuk had some issues, obviously, with that in his second season post, you know, the COVID season kind of was the lost season. And then the second season is where we started hearing about possibly, or we just saw it on the depth chart. We saw other guys, Trent Sherfield, playing ahead of him. Do you think that's something easily passed by a Shanahan coaching staff?
No, but I any wide receiver who gets drafted by Kyle Shanahan is going to have to scrutinize the details. I mean, everybody that would come in would have to go through that doghouse here where they're learning the details. I think that Shanahan would see his movement skills and be reminded of Ayuk and of Dante Pettis. I mean, this is what Shanahan's looking for, is how the guy moves. And then that's sort of the beauty of it. This would be his learning year, Adonai Mitchell. And then next year, when you really need him, would be the year where hopefully he would have it all together. But any receiver who comes in is going to get the third degree from Kyle Shanahan.
Well, you know, Chris Conley can just take him under his wing, right? The obvious.
Your guy,
The next guy. The next guy on the ladder. You can step right up. 31-year-old Chris Conley. But, I've said this over and over again. It's like the full-scale receiver. The guy who does everything. The physical, the blocking, the run routes, the yards after catch. Now, we'll see if Mitchell, in the NFL, he can do that. But, like, that's what Ayuk is. They could use another guy like that. They've got some gimmick guys. Debo's way more than a gimmick guy, but he's not a pure route runner. Like, I know he's going to take this step and go to this step and be there, you know, in 2.1 seconds. They don't quite know that with Debo. That's not what his talents are. They could use another guy like that. And that's why I like Conley. It's like, he just does stuff like that. He's a receiver. On that big, huge play, it was in the Lions game. He's going to go out and he's going to be at that, make the break, and Purdy knows he's going to do that. And it feels like that's what you're saying, Mitchell, is I don't know. I've watched some Texas, and I've kind of felt that the size part of it is big, the physical part of it. I'm not going to go with you on this one, though. I don't – again, who knows what they're going to do at 31. I've said move up for a tackle, but, man, I don't know what the top 30 visits are shaping up like. Not hearing tackles in that list, as far as I know, we don't know who they've all talked to, but – man, I'm feeling defensive line. It's just so easy for them to fail safe into a defensive line. And now I think about it. No, they did lose three first-round picks from the defensive line. Javon Kinlaw, Eric Armstead, and Chase Young, who, you know, obviously a late add to the season, but he was a top, top talent, top, top pick, that are no longer on this defensive line. And this is, we know this administration that loves to add first-round talents to defensive line, just keep stacking them in there. Cleveland Furl would be another one, right? Lose Cleveland Furl. That's another first-round pick they've lost from this defensive line. I don't know whether there'd be a great defensive lineman at 31. It just feels like I can just see them going, you know what? If we don't have our tackle and we're not going to push it there and we have something else we want at a position that we, you know, maximize at all costs, could be defensive line. Just thinking about the talent, the physical archetypes they've lost already on the defensive line. Is there like a couple easy options you would think at 31 for a defensive lineman, Barrows?
Yeah, one guy that I was considering for the esteemed draft crush, Jerzon Newton. He's a defensive tackle from Illinois, also goes by Johnny Newton. And he is, you know, the spitting image of Javon Hargrave. I mean, basically the same size and really gets off the line of scrimmage very quickly. I mean, if he's still there at 31, and that's sort of a question mark, I think that he's too good to be there at 31. But if he's still there, that would very much be a possibility. And, you know, Hargrave is in his 30s. Basically, the swap that the 49ers made with Houston for Malik Collins. You know, Collins is getting up there in age. He's a step down from Eric Armstead. So, I mean, you could make the argument that there is a need for a defensive tackle, even if this guy is sort of captaining that second Chris Kocurek unit. I think that would be, you know, it would be the most talented backup unit that they've had in a while. So, absolutely, I can see that happening. I don't know whether this guy's visited, though. Mm-hmm. And today is the first day of the big, you know, the 49ers bring in just about all of their visits, I'd say two-thirds of their visits at the same time. So that's today and tomorrow. They take them to Top Golf. They, you know, they have meals with them. The idea is that you get some one-on-one time with each of these guys, but you also see how they interact with each other. And that was an Adam Peters thing. Adam Peters has brought that to D.C., Washington is having its big kind of group thing today. It's all about the quarterbacks with them. My point is that we might get a couple more names, and I've got a good list of names, but boy, these are all kind of day two, day three type of guys. There might be a couple that come out. Jerzon Newton is one that I'm looking to see whether he's there, because he could be available at the end of the first round. And if he is, that might be exactly what the 49ers end up doing.
I mean, it's not hard to see John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan drafting a defensive lineman. It just never is hard to see that. And now that, yeah, they've lost some guys. They lost some talent there. It's still talented. They signed Leonard Floyd. Obviously, they have other talent there, but they got Javon Hargrave. They've got Bosa, obviously, but never tricky to figure that out. I still think they should draft a tackle. I would say move up to get use some draft capital to get a tackle. I don't know if that's for sure happening. Maybe we'll get a much better feel in the next few days when maybe these names start trickling out. Barrows, any 49er reaction to your draft crushes over the years even? Have you heard anybody who jokes with you about it, or like, hey, what's your draft crush going to be? Like, are they waiting for it? Anything like that?
I remember I had Tank Carradine as one of my draft crushes, and I remember Jed York teasing me about that because they ended up drafting Tank Carradine, but I had him as my first-round draft crush, and he lasted into the second. And Jed said something like, you know how he sometimes teases the pick. He's like, Matt Barrows is really going to enjoy this next second round. But Tank was one of my misses, and there've been a few, and there've been a few at wide receivers. So maybe I shouldn't be drafting wide receivers. I draft wide receivers about as well as Trent Baalke drafts wide receivers.
You do a lot of things about as well as Trent Baalke does, let me put it that way.
Trent famously taking a receiver in the 30s back in 2012, won A.J. Jenkins. I can guarantee you that Adonai Mitchell is going to be a better pro.
Well, he'll get through the rookie mini camp without the head coach ripping him. That was like, I was thinking about that because we just think about during the draft. That draft, because it was Jenkins, like LaMichael James, yes. I think, right? And like none of these guys did anything for the board. I guess LaMichael James played for a year. That was either a sign of the pending split with Balky and Harbaugh, or it was like the cause, the beginning of it, because it was just a useless draft. Harbaugh like defended it because I think he just felt he had to, and maybe he liked a pick or two, but none of them did anything for them. This is a team right now, like they're just all they're thinking about is Super Bowl wins. They got to the Super Bowl that season with very little help from any of the 2012 draft class, and it just felt like there's something wrong here where they're not drafting the guys the coaches want, or the coaches are pushing for guys who aren't any. I'm not quite sure, but definitely felt like some disconnect with that draft, with AJ Jenkins kind of being the signal at the top of the whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, you think about what the makeup of the Harbaugh teams was. I mean, the kind of tough blue collar, and they went counter to that in that draft. Those two guys that you just mentioned are known for kind of being soft guys. and surprise, surprise, they didn't work out very well. And I was thinking about that this morning when I woke up, that they ended up sort of trying to clean up the AJ Jenkins thing by trading him to the Chiefs for John Baldwin, who was the Chiefs' first round mistake. And it just kind of goes to show, you know, where those organizations were a decade ago versus where they are now. But both of those teams made colossal blunders in the first round. They realized it early on, and they tried to sort of clean up the mess, or at least disguise the mess, by trading their bust receivers to each other. I think that's a great way of sort of, this has been underplayed, but I think that a good thing that John Lynch and Adam Peters did in previous years was really start to figure out what the coaching staff wants and get buy-in from the coaching staff. Peters was really good at that. And Peters is now doing the same thing. And I've been talking with Ben Standig, our Commanders writer, about, you know, what are the elements of a Adam Peters draft. And one of the things that Peters did, which I thought was really cool, was on day three, he would have everybody in the room before the draft started stand up and say, okay, if we could pick one guy on here, day three, rounds 4, 5, 6, and 7, who's your guy? And so each person would stand up and sort of make a pitch for a certain player. And then, you know, if there was consensus, if there was more than a few people saying the same name, they would try to go out and get that guy. And so, like I'm saying, there's buy-in. Like everybody is sort of kind of invested in certain players, and that did not seem to be the case in that 2012 draft. And my other point is that Adam Peters isn't here anymore. This is going to be a new draft for this new group, and it'll be interesting. I think they're going to, you know, borrow a lot of things that he brought to the organization. At least they should. This will be their first one without Adam Peters. I think he did. He probably left with the draft board pretty much the way it's going to be. But, you know, all of these visits that are taking place right now, all that stuff, this is the first time that they've done it without Peters.
They're going to get to the point, pick of 31, no Peters. Oh, dear Lord, what do we do? Let's go back and look at Barros' draft crush.
There you go.
Let's go back. Let's go see. Speaking of investment, Brandon Ayuk is always the offseason of Ayuk. We just saw that there was a signing with the Philadelphia Eagles, Devontae Smith, reported 3 years and 75. We don't know the structure of that. It's actually $25 million a year when it really comes down to it. I would bet it's a little bit less. But, you know, $51 million or $52 million guarantee kind of leads you to believe 25 is in the ballpark, because usually the bonus is two times the annual salary. What do you think about that? Where do you think that puts the 49ers? Where do you think that puts Brandon Ayuk? And, you know, voluntary works or off-season workouts are beginning. Do you have any knowledge of whether Ayuk is actually participating in them?
I don't. My guess is that he's not taking part. I mean, Debo Samuel didn't at this point.
They are voluntary.
Voluntary. Yeah. I don't know if Christian McCaffrey is there, for example. Yeah. So, you and I have talked about how the draft is going to be an interesting point. They may field a couple of offers. They didn't get moved to do anything when they got some offers for Deebo Samuel 2 years ago. But the thing with the Deebo Samuel episode was that very shortly thereafter, after the draft passed, and after it was clear that they weren't going to trade him, things started to soften. Yep. Things started to thaw. And Deebo Samuel showed up at some of the OTAs and minicamps. He didn't take part in them, but he was there. And you know, that's what I'm going to be looking for. This is probably, 3 or 4 weeks from now when they have that first OTA. Is Brandon Ayuk just kind of on the sideline? Is he bumming around? I mean, Deebo Samuel was joking around with people, joking around with coaches, things like that. That was a signal that, okay, you know, this contract isn't done now, but it's going to get done. I think that's the beauty of Kyle Shanahan, is that he's tight with these guys. He stays out of the negotiation. He doesn't try to influence it. I'm certain that he's the one that sort of reeled Deebo Samuel back in from the edge 2 years ago. And I think that the same thing is going to end up happening with Brandon Ayuk.
What's the Matt Barros life like when there are like speculation, what should we call them, or reports or whatever that was with Ayuk a couple days ago that he theoretically, according to this report, that he had requested a trade, immediately shot down by his agent, Ryan Williams. But what do you go through when you see someone like that?
Well, I take credit for that because I wrote Ryan Williams. I said, hey, I don't know this reporter. I don't know if this is right, but this is out there and making the rounds right now. And of course, Ryan Williams didn't respond to me, but he did hop on to Twitter and shoot it down immediately. So I don't know whether I'm the cause of that. I'd like to think that I was, but I probably wasn't. Not to toot my own horns, but I'm trying to go to official sources to determine whether any of this is true. There was a weird oddball picture of Brandon Ayuk yesterday, sort of like getting ready for work type of picture where he's like in the foyer of a house. He's got a coffee cup in his hand and people interpreted that like, oh, he's showing up for the first day of the offseason program. Was he? I don't know. I mean, it's such a vague, ambiguous type of thing, but that's the kind of world we live in right now. Like if Brandon Ayuk can type the letter B onto Twitter, and then that'll spurn like 600 stories. Like, what does that mean? B?
Yes. Or I know what this means. This clearly means that he's being traded to
gone?
Toronto Alouettes. It's a done deal. Yes.
So, I mean, my point is covering contract negotiations is terrible. It's tedious. It's a bunch of fake stuff. You know, you're supposed to get all hot and bothered when he unfollows the 49ers on social media. I feel like if I ever did a story on that, a little piece of me would die inside. It's just not worth it. It's just not worth it.
Hey, you sent the email to his agent based on.
Well, yeah, I mean, I was looking for something official, and I would have written something if he had responded to me. Mm-hmm. But I'm not going to write about unfollowing on social media. That's just I'm too old for that. I think I'd just keel over and die at that point.
Well, this is the thing. It's like it could happen. He could request a trade. It certainly has happened in the past. It happened with Deebo Samuel. It does not mean he's being traded. It means that this is just a process that they go through. Could mean he's, as you mentioned, it could mean he's being traded. But a request doesn't really change that. Like if they get an offer they like and they don't think the contract's coming, they could trade him. If he wants to go, they could trade him. But also, I think he would prefer to stay for a contract that he likes. And the 49ers would prefer him to stay. They just got to find that ground. Yeah, if he doesn't get if there's nothing by the first round, I guess a percentage chance into the second round, although I wouldn't think they'd move him for a second round pick, then 99% chance he's at some point re-signing with the 49ers because the 49ers would make that decision on the draft. That's when you make that decision. So I saw somewhere saying, shockingly, this stuff is coming up around the draft. You think that's all done? No. This is when the trade stuff happens because smart teams move the player, consider moving the player right before the draft so they can get the draft pick in and have that player that year. This is where other teams have screwed up. I've mentioned this, the Raiders trading Khalil Mack in a contract dispute right before the opener. What, they're getting draft picks that don't happen for 8 months. What's the point? And you don't know the number. You don't know what number of pick it is. If you do it right now, you know the pick. You literally have the pick. You've been studying the draft, and that's the much better value, much better certainty through this whole thing. And again, the Deebo Samuel is the number one way for us to kind of compare it to. Once that first round went, they were going to bring Deebo Samuel in at some point. I think that's the calculation at least the 49ers make. And yeah, have you any sense that there's any progress, any sense of what either side is thinking right now beyond what we've talked about over and over again?
No sense whatsoever. Again, I think this gets done in July, like they all always do. The George Kittle contract at this point in the process, whatever year that was difficult. And George Kittle and his agent were beside themselves. And then it got worked out. And Deebo Samuel was the same thing. And I'm sure Nick Bosa was the same thing. This is what we have to deal with. Get through the draft. Probably not going to get traded, but they're going to listen. And then once that's done, that's when sanity returns and they get down to brass tacks.
They can do the Eagles method. If you're going to pay the guy, pay him now. Take care of him. Although I guess it ruins all this fodder, all this podcast fodder. But, you know, you don't have to do it in late July. You can do it now if you want to clean it up.
Well, and there's an argument for doing it now, because if you do it now, you're doing it before all these other wide receivers get paid. And that number.
Justin Jefferson, by the way.
Jefferson will be up there. I don't think that Brandon Ayuk is going to be asking for exactly what Jefferson gets. But, that's going to be part of the calculus at that point. So you get it done now. It's sort of like the Jimmy Garoppolo one in 2018. Jimmy Garoppolo was the highest paid NFL player ever for like a week and a half. And then he wasn't. But if you had waited.
Do you remember who jumped over him very quickly? Do you remember who that player was?
I can't remember. Was it Kirk Cousins?
Derek Carr. Derek Carr. It's like, okay. We got Jimmy Garoppolo and then Derek Carr as the numbers one and two of the highest paid players in the history of the NFL. Then that was superseded very quickly. I forget by who, but it's always going to get superseded. You do the contract and then someone else is going to top you. It's not like that was part of the Bosa thing was like, if you're going to do it, you're going to pay him $34 million a year, whatever the hell the number is. Like, why don't you do it a little earlier so he's in camp? I don't quite get that part. I understand it's negotiation, and maybe he was asking for 37, but I think he was about at that number. Why don't you just do it so you can have him in camp if you're actually going to pay that number at the end?
Well, I mean, the 49ers start to get leverage in late July when training camp starts and the guy starts getting docked, you know, for every day that he misses. I mean, that's usually what moves it. I mean, that's the leverage that the 49ers have at that point.
I don't think they had a lot of leverage on Nick Bosa. Well, I'll say it that way. No. I don't think he came down very much, and I don't think they actually
forgave him. Fines too. And, yeah. And they said that they would, like from the get go. It's like, oh, okay, it's you lost your negotiation.
So if you're gonna do all that, then why don't you just? Well, it's negotiation. What do I know about multi-million-dollar negotiations? But I just like if the Eagles do it now, like you can do one of them now. Like I mean, I'm just like everyone else. I'm the one. Oh yeah, they don't do these deals till the end of July. It's not going to happen till the end of July. I did hear a little bit during the Bosa thing from not the Bosa people, but people around the Bosa things. Like, if they're going to pay him, why don't they just do it now? Like, you know, like why does this have to go to the very, very, very end? I don't think the Bosa people were like, we're coming down. You know, oh my God, if we're going to miss the first game, we're going to come down. Like, they were coming down. Like, I guess maybe the 49ers had to wait it out to see if he was coming down. Nick Bosa was not coming down. That number was going to be the number he was coming in at, or he was not coming in. Maybe Ayuk's different. Maybe Debo's different. Fred Warner, we know the different deals. George Kittle. But you can go ahead and do it early if you want to. You really can. So, you know, you do your free agent deals before that. Like you do Trent, they did Trent Williams when he was a free agent because they had to do it. Why don't you just do it right now? Okay, that's my little mini rant.
John Lynch is going to hold his dog and pony show pre-draft presser on Monday. It's great question to ask him. I mean, you know, you're going to get this deal done. Why not do it now instead of August 3 or something like that? It's a very good question.
We'll just say the Eagles do it this way. Why don't you just be like the Eagles? Come on.
Yeah.
If you're going to pay the top dollar, like if, again, maybe this is a different one, but the Bosa one was kind of silly, I thought. Like, if you're going to pay him $34 million a year, this was the number you could have got him at any point. If you had offered $34 million a year, he would have come in. Like, that would have happened, and they didn't. So maybe they were holding out they could get him for 31 or 29, but they weren't. It was Nick Bosa. All right, Barros, anything else you got here? Where we lean up, we got almost, week and a half before the draft now. So things are getting intense. Things are getting important. What do you got?
Yeah, well, I mean, the most interesting thing for me draft-wise was that John Lynch and Chris Furster were caught wearing sweatshirts, hoodies, up there for, I don't know, even know what it was, whether it was the spring game, and then there was some alumni there who then worked out for those guys. It reminded me of the Jim Harbaugh, Greg Roman foray to Durham, North Carolina, mm-hmm. where they were scouting out Peyton Manning back in the day, and they came in and they had their hoodies up because they didn't want anybody to see them. These guys were a little bit more obvious because they were wearing University of Washington gear, and they got
purple, pure purple.
They got caught by the team website and kind of put on display there. But man, we're talking about wide receivers. One of the guys who was there is Rome Odunze. I mean, they're not going to draft him, but it's a loaded draft class for Washington with a couple of offensive linemen. And the one that's caught everybody's eye is Roger Rosengarten, who played right tackle for Washington, but he's protecting a left-handed quarterback. And people think that he's got, you know, right or left tackle skills, and that he could be the guy that the 49ers are circling. Our guy, Dane Brugler, has him as a, you know, second/third round type of guy. And maybe that fits where the 49ers are picking at the end of the second. But if he's really the guy that they fall in love with, and you know, he's got some really good movement skills. He seems like he'd be a really good fit in a zone blocking scheme, et cetera, et cetera. You know, are you gonna kind of risk it that he's gonna be there at 60, whatever they're picking? Or do you take him at 31, or do you trade back and take him early in the second round? I don't know. He's a what I would call a person of interest. You know, like finally a top tackle, day one or day two tackle that, you know, we've got documentation that these guys are showing interest in.
Two things on that. One, did they Furster and Lynch just forget to bring sweaters or something like that, and they had to be garbed? And because, like, you would normally be wearing 49ers gear, guys, when you're out on the road and you're scouting, you wear your team garb. You don't wear the school's garb. I thought that was amusing. I just thought it was really nice stuff. I don't know. And John Lynch, Mr. Stanford, come on now. And two, I would make for a really boring first night if they trade out of 31, and they couldn't say what it's for, right? They would just be trading out of 31, moving back. And what do you write, Barros? What's the story?
You write, okay, these are the second round targets that they could be looking at. And really there have been a lot of second round targets. So, I mean, I would not put that out of the realm of possibility. Sometimes teams try to move back into the first round. Especially for quarterbacks, because you want that fifth-year option for the QBs. I don't know who that quarterback would be, whether the Michigan guy slips further than everybody thinks he is.
No way. He's getting that far. Yeah. Right. Penix would be, I think, the one, just because of the injury and the age questions, and maybe he gets through to the late 20s. Maybe. That's a valuable pick. That's a valuable trade 31, the team that wants it. I mean, that's a valuable, valuable move. And maybe you get, like, you know, an early second and a third. And so you start racking up some draft picks. Boy, that would be a tough column to write, though, man. I'm thinking about myself. Like, I'm going to be there. Like, they traded out of 31 and don't have a player to write about? Well, maybe we'll just ask him about Brandon Ayuk, right? I mean, it just would be tough. My other thing, when I was thinking about them not taking offensive linemen, and maybe they're taking a defensive lineman, it's like, Or maybe they'll trade the one for a veteran like that. They've done things like that before. They haven't traded a one for a veteran, but they traded what, 2, 4 and whatever for Trent Williams. Like, some of this makes me feel like Shanahan's not going to trust a young guy just to plop him at tackle. Maybe there's a veteran tackle out there who he likes, who's played in similar systems. God, you know, there's so many Shanahan systems out there now that they can see what the guy looks like playing their kind of movement style. Maybe they trade 31 for that guy. I'm thinking I'm coming off of them drafting a tackle, probably 31, and more like what's the other options, defensive line, wide receiver, and maybe trade for a tackle. I don't know. I don't even know who that would be. You know, Tristan Wirfs is ungettable. That's the obviously the ideal candidate, and that ain't happening. So I think anything is now on the table because I'm getting a little leery of them not getting any top 30 visits from tackles at the moment. We might see a whole bunch of them. Maybe there's going to be a whole bunch of a Top Golf. Don't go there. Don't search for them. But if anyone happens to see a couple large fellows walking around with John Lynch in the next few days, let me know.
If you're a Top Golf employee, you will pay good money for a list of clients who come through there. My thoughts on the tackle thing is that whenever we've talked to Chris Foerster, the O-line coach, and he talks once a week, and he talks a lot. It's clear that, and this is a league-wide thing, is that, you know, the young tackles who come into the league are unimpressive. They just have not been trained to be NFL players. I mean, it's probably the worst, maybe quarterback, but the biggest jump from college to the NFL is offensive line and probably offensive tackle, just because of the way the college game is. So they may have concluded that, you know, whoever we bring in is going to require all sorts of schooling and time and effort. So let's not blow our first round pick on that guy. We might as well use a middle round pick or a day two pick. I mean, I'm just trying to think of what their rationale could be, or it could be that they don't think that any of those top guys is going to be available at 31. So why bring Amarius Mims in if we think that he's going to go number 16 overall, that type of thing? That's what I'm thinking about that spot.
Can we think along with John Lynch and the assorted 49ers executives? We shall see how we do. I'm a little baffled by the seeming lack of concentration on those top tackles. So maybe we're just wrong, or maybe they'll surprise us and take one of them without having talked to them or brought them in for a lot. Maybe they've done all the research at the combine, but the coaches weren't there. Like, Foerster wasn't there.
Yeah,
and that's a pretty large thing to not have him have hands-on experience with a guy.
Yeah, they had Jordan Morgan. He's the University of Arizona tackle. Another guy who projects well for his own blocking scheme. It makes total sense. He's going to be there at 31. They met with him at the combine, but it was just the personnel guys that met with him. Shanahan wasn't there. Chris Foerster wasn't there. Hard time thinking that they would take a tackle without him ever sitting down with the offensive line coach. And maybe they did the Zoom meetings and stuff like that. There are ways to get around it. But, you know, if this is the guy that you want to take over for Trent Williams, don't you want to meet with a guy? You know,
and speaking of how well they, you know, Kyle knew Trent Williams, right? He had worked with him. He had coached him.
And Foerster.
Foerster. Yeah, exactly. So, It there's a little disconnect there with any sense that they're locked into a tackle or will be locked into a tackle. So I don't know. But hey, they took a hard look at all those quarterbacks in 2021, right? That's why they moved up when they did. And
They didn't. They actually didn't, because it was a COVID year. So
they did as much as they could.
They did as much as they could. But, you know, they never had the intimate, like the dinner, the one-on-one meetings. Mm-hmm. None of that could take place. He couldn't get within 10 feet of these guys. Yeah.
They went to the pro days, though, as I guess I'm saying. Like, right. Shanahan went. Right. Like, Kyle went to 3 pro days, which may never happen ever again.
Exactly.
You know, it's like, he might not go to – you don't go to Stanford's pro days anymore. Like, he just doesn't do that stuff. So that was like – they showed an intensity that we're never going to see them probably do ever again. All right, Barrows, that was good. We'll got one more pre-draft conversation next week. We'll see where I am. I don't know if I'm going to be Warriors playoffs or not. It might be over tonight. Well,
are you going to be grilling John Lynch on Monday?
I hope to, but not if the Warriors are playing in Oklahoma City on Sunday. So,
Warriors.
Yeah, we shall see.
You're running the draft.
I know. I'm just trying to make all my hotel reservations just in case, and every one of them is like 3-day advance cancel, so I can't make them because we don't know where the Warriors are going to be. They might be out tonight, and I don't want to get stuck with a hotel bill in Oklahoma City. All right, Barrows, we'll see how it goes.
All right.
Either way, we'll be doing a show next week somewhere, somehow, and maybe you can get the all John Lynch stuff possible. Let me know how it goes.
I will channel my inner TK and just grill these guys.
Forceful.
Get tossed out of the building.
That's happened before. All right, everybody. Show over today.